Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures. I'm your host, Paul Booth. Today we are here to discuss. I was talking too fast. I tend to do that on these shows. I get so excited. We're here to discuss Los Angeles Outfest. I'm going to bring in, I don't know if this is the director of the documentary subject. I'm going to keep you on hold before I introduce you. I'll continue introducing you to the show here. So thank you for your patience. Today we're here to discuss, we have the next caller coming in, and one moment, I'm just going to keep, I'm going to finish up the introduction of the show before I bring you guys in. So thank you so much for your patience and for your time today. Today's episode of Talking Pictures, we're going to be discussing a film that screened at Outfest over the weekend. It screened on Sunday, July 10th at 3 p.m. We received this screener through our good friend Jonah, always sharing wonderful films with us. It's always exciting to see emails pop up from him. I know I'm in for an educational treat or an entertaining treat or a great, dare I say, social issue. Even though I don't like to say social issue, I think we're all humans, but we label these things social issues. So with that, the film today is called Raising Zoe, and we have Zoe, and if I pronounce any names wrong, please correct me. We have Zoe Luna with us. Welcome, Zoe.
Hi. Hi, Paul.
And we have, hello, welcome to Talking Pictures. And we have Dante Alencastre.
Yes, Paul. Hi.
Excellent. Thank you. I'm so glad I got those. I'm like batting 90 for out of 100 and every once in a while. So thank you. Thank you for joining us today. We're going to get into various topics with this film. As you know, the Outfest is for LGBTQ films. And for those of us who don't know, Zoe, if you could take this first question. When this began, when I was in high school, it was LGB, then it was LGBT, and now it's Q. I didn't want to Google. I wanted to get answers and information from guests. So what does the addition of the Q mean for the films and the movement of this civil rights issue?
Well, from what I've heard is that the Q means queer. So for me, I think it just completes the rainbow. But I know there's a bunch of other letters in the rainbow that aren't really talked about right now. But to me, it's just queer. It represents everything that a person could possibly be. Like, they're just queer. That's what they are. They're gay, bisexual. That I think, from my perspective, that just means that they're everything in the rainbow of the LGBTQ affiliation.
May I add also, Paul, that the Q sometimes is, it depends in which space you're in. I mean, it also represents questioning. And one of the other things that we forget is about intersex communities. So we also have that. And like you said, it's always evolving and it's always trying to be as inclusive as possible.
Oh, okay, I see. Because I wanted to be dead on with the information. I know with talk show hosts, we have a responsibility to do research and research and research. But the problem with the internet not being regulated is that sometimes we get the wrong research. So every once in a while, I do come off as a host that didn't look something up, but I thought, I called Google the bologna that comes in the package, and I called the guest the nice steak dinner that will provide the information. So the internet sometimes, take it or leave it, especially nowadays. So with this film, first of all, the question I'd love to ask and hear about from both of you was, how did the premiere go? Either one of you can start out.
You can start, Zoe.
Okay. Well, the premiere was very exciting. It was different because I didn't expect the movie to be like how it turned out to. I expected it, I think, to be very long. And I don't know, it was amazing. I was really shocked that it went and came out so good. I guess that's all I asked. I'm kind of speechless on the topic.
Well, for me, it's like it really surpassed any kind of wildest expectations that I had for the film. But I knew from the very beginning that, you know, the family was special. And I was just concerned about not screwing it up, you know, not trying to stay away of the let them tell their story, and just for me to enhance it, to make it have a broader appeal. And I think we accomplished that. I mean, our audience was so diverse. I was very happy about that. And I know you, I read your review, by the way, and I'm so moved that you were moved by our film enough that you personalized it when you talked about it on Thursday. But, and I know you don't like the word diverse, but I'm going to use
no,
that
no.
a couple of times.
Oh, no. I'm glad that you brought that up, because I, after I did that review, I started thinking more about the word, and I thought about how when we, the premise of this show was to have diversity in filmmakers, meaning my goal would be to have a kindergarten filmmaker on Monday and Al Pacino on Tuesday, just to show that we all love movies and you don't need a house in the Hollywood Hills to enjoy cinema. So I had rethought that word diverse, and mainly I'm glad that you brought attention to the review. I now have learned that it's when the word is used in a derogatory way. It's a great word and a beautiful word, but when people want to use it as, I can't handle the diversity of California, or there's too many different ethnicities in this area, that's when it's, so thank you for bringing that up, because it's definitely a very important word. And like everything, my mother's favorite saying is, it's not what we say, it's how we say it. So
exactly.
so she'll like that you brought that up. I will hear about that later when she hears the show. For you as a filmmaker, congratulations on your past success. I see just being an alumni of the festival, and your other films that you made, was for this specific project, was there any interesting challenges knowing that your main collaborator or the subject was a child? Like when they say it's toughest to work with child actors, or just any of that. What was that process like for you?
Well, I mean, maybe to just to lighten the mood, I mean, Zoe is mature beyond her years. So she was never a problem. But I to tell you honestly,
before I approached them to even make the film,
her youth was a concern of mine. I didn't know if I knew I was very respectful and sensitive to their family and to their family dynamics, but I didn't know if I wanted to bring that kind of visibility and exposure to a child. But then it dawned on me, because I known about Zoe and Ophelia since 2013, that they had already done a few PSAs. They had spoken at many public events, and this is something that Zoe and Ophelia had talked about, discussed about within the family, and that they had wanted to be advocates for, you know, changing people's hearts and minds. So bearing that in mind, I went ahead and I was bold enough to ask Ophelia if they would mind if I follow them around with my camera. But Zoe's a consummate professional, and I never had any problems with her.
Well, that's fantastic and a testament to you, Zoe. Making films, we're constantly stressing on this show that we never have on a film or cover a film that we don't enjoy, because there's nothing conducive to trashing a filmmaker's work or saying what was wrong with it. We're here to support film, people, issues, and so it's very a great thing that I know you appreciate, but to work with adult filmmakers and hang in the process, it's very hard to make a bad film. It's still early mornings, it's still long days, it's still neck aches and headaches, and where's the money going to come from? Of course, things are changing now with digital and ways that you raise films or raise money, and the way you get word out there is definitely changing. Did you guys have as filmmakers, when we set up goals, like maybe our first goal is we want this issue out there, and maybe our second goal is we'd like to play a few festivals or we'd like to end up in libraries. Did you have any side goals that were maybe just for you to achieve as filmmakers that weren't about getting in the media or getting on PBS, that were for you two to kind of say, hey, Zoe, we did that, yeah.
Well, I don't know if I'm clear of what you're asking, but what I'm going to say about, I think my previous work, like you mentioned before, this is the third film that I have premiered at Outfest, and they're my film family, and I think every project that I've done has been different, and I think I learned from every experience that I had, and I always tried to do better and better. The funding has always been an issue because I do the films that I'm very passionate about, and the people that come into my life and I decide to make a film of, because I know it's going to be a 2-year process or a 3-year process, I really have to fall in love with them. So in the case of Zoe and her family, I met Zoe and her mom at my world premiere of my previous film, which was about a local trans-Latina activist, Bambi Salcedo. And like I said, I heard about their story. I was hesitant about making a film about someone so young. But after I gained their trust and confidence, and we found a lot of like affinities, which I might discuss later with you, because it was like the universe was telling me, Dante, I think you should be making this film, now, not later, not instead of another project. You have to make this film now. So, and also the other thing I have to mention is that because of my previous work, the community has embraced my work. So I've done so many crowdfunding campaigns. I've borrowed money from so many of my friends who have seen my work and become my friends because of my work, that I've gained a trust and I think the community has supported me blindly on my project. Even before I have only an idea, people just want to see what I'm doing next and want to support it.
Well, that's fantastic, and that's the best way for take that tip for filmmakers, not only to let the work do the talking, but to also, you know, they have that, I'm sure the saying goes way, way back, but it is 100% true, where to be a good filmmaker starts with being a good person, and then that leads to having a good story, and you know, you got to be your word, and you got to be more than just that trophy on closing night. So that's a very good attitude, and thank you for sharing that with the audience. With, you know, sometimes with the audience, it's just entertainment, but we also like to have people that can learn some filmmaking tips and take it into their work. And I know in my personal work, even with this show, our number one, I mean, down to the fact that we're talking today is because Jonah is a very good person. He's a great PR rep, and he's always sharing with us, and we're always able to have a good turnout and do good numbers together. So it you know how it is. It goes around in a circle. With the film, I'll read the synopsis. And again, this played Outfest. And before I go into the synopsis, do you have a, because this was the world premiere, do you have a next screening set up somewhere where someone can see this? Because I will plug the trailer, the website, the Facebook, all that. But is there any set screenings as of now?
Well, thanks, Paul, for plugging my the film and the teaser on your website. I'm Zoe Ophelia, and I were so proud and honored to have been chosen to be one of the centerpieces of the upcoming Gender Odyssey conference in Seattle. Gender Odyssey is one of the largest conferences. It's a 3-4 day conference that they hold every year, that mostly to talk about issues of transgender youth. So it attracts a lot of parents, because as you have heard recently in the news, there's a lot of people in the community just coming out in droves, and the youth are coming out like really early, 6, 7, 8 years old. Then there's the teenage group, which is where Zoe belongs now, and there's the, you know, the later youth, like between 18 and 24. So we're so proud that we're going to be able to share that story with people who have gone through a lot of the same experience that Ophelia and her family have gone through. In terms of the film festivals, we are still waiting. As you mentioned, we just had our world premiere on Sunday, and people were like, wait and see, you know, what's going to happen. You know, we need to have the final cut and all of that. But I'm hoping that we're going to bring the film to the Q Film Festival in Long Beach, where Zoe lives right now. It's very close to Long Beach, so it will attract that her local community. Maybe some of her friends from high school and middle school will come. So I'm very excited about the prospects. And now the rest is, right now it's just, I'm waiting to hear from them. But we have plenty of requests. And my ultimate goal is, of course, to bring the people to bring the film to the masses. And so a broadcast possibility is definitely in part of my vision.
Well, do you guys have, when is this, just so people know, so they can tell their friends or family, when is this Seattle event?
Oh, the Seattle event starts the 4th of August and ends on the 7th of August.
Okay, 4th, 7th August. Okay. Just so you guys know that that's out there. We do have a... our designer of our logo that you'll see when you receive the interview later and of our business card is from Seattle, my film school roommate who now does effects on multiple blockbusters. We have a Washington reporter who covers the Seattle International Film Festival for our show and brings us extra films that we miss down here. So Pacific Northwest means a lot to us. That was where I went to film school in Vancouver, Canada. So congrats on that. And now we'll jump into just a synopsis so you know we can have a discussion with Zoe about some of these things that she went through personally that you can see in the film. But it'll be nice to hear from Zoe. Mm-hmm. And again, Zoe, I commend you for the courage to make a film like this. It is, of course, important you have a director that you're working with that you trust and you're with your family and you're doing something that's important to you. But I don't think people ever truly understand really what it takes to let their life be documented. There was that great movie Ed TV back in like 1999 or 2000 that Ron Howard made where it was making fun of celebrities.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
But it had cameras following around and it showed you that whole like, you know, what is it like if cameras are like following you when you like eat dinner and it was more of a celebrity thing. It wasn't a social issue, but this felt like that, and I'm sure there was, you know, because teens don't work the 20-hour days that film crews do, and so of course there was downtime. But with the synopsis here, and pardon me, I have a little bit of a speech impediment when I read, so please bear with me. Affecting the lives of countless kids, teenagers, and even adults, 13-year-old trans activist Zoe Luna wants nothing more than to simply go to school, learn, have fun with her friends in Downey, California. Unfortunately, ignorance and intolerance have not always made this easy. With the help of her mother, Ophelia, her older sister, Leticia, and the ACLU, which I loved that they got involved. I thought that was really cool. Zoe fought school officials for her right to help. Oh, sorry. For her right to self-identify in school, even in the face of bullying and endless teasing from both school officials and students. Zoe determinedly continues to live her life as she is, and tells her story in the hopes of helping others persevere in living their authentic lives. The Los Angeles Police honored Zoe in 2013 with the Outstanding Youth Leader Award, given to a young person who has worked for the betterment of young people's lives easy to swatch those words, of course, with the bullying. Of young people's lives in regards to LGBT issues. And in 2014, Zoe won her case, setting a precedent for other school boards to follow. This is the heartwarming story of a family faced with the insurmountable challenges of a youth gender transition, instinctively and unconditionally supporting her daughter's journey. Ophelia reaches out to a community beyond her resources for guidance and knowledge. Zoe is not special because she is trans. She is special because she is my child. That is the quote from the mother. So with that wonderful story that I Zoe, I don't know if you heard, I won't go into it because we're going to use inner time here, but I'm not sure how much you heard of the review that I gave it, but it hit me on a very strong personal level. Having spent a year of my life living with two gay men, and I kind of walked away from it seeing that heterosexual people had it together better than were worse off and argued more. And so with that, really kind of this documentary got to show, some of that defying the odds. And, you know, where do you get this courage? Where do you draw this courage from for your age? Courage is a hard thing. I'm 37 and courage is a hard thing. How do you get it as you're going through these years of 11, 12, 13, 14?
Well, for me, my courage definitely comes from my mother, because to me in my whole life, everything that I do just makes me a lot more confident if I have my mother's support. I really don't need anyone else's support other than my own mom's support, because I just have a really close relationship with my mom and I really respect her and definitely look up to her. So anything she says or agrees with is definitely what makes me feel like I can do what I can do. So if I didn't have my mom's support, I wouldn't be able to be so courageous and brave for my age.
And do you have any kind of... what do you do when you're having to face something where, say, your mom's at work or your mom's not quite there? Do you have a meditational technique or a song that you can think of or something that you can, go into your own route? I don't want to say your own consciousness.
I know what you're saying. For me, I feel like I don't totally depend on my mom. I don't think I need her all the time because, I am growing up and becoming an independent person. I need her sometimes when I'm really thinking about a huge change in my life, and I need her support on that level. But I don't depend on her like if I need her to be there with a baby bottle. So, I mean, for me, I just do me. I don't really have a song or do something, some type of meditation to be okay because she's not there. I don't know. I'm more independent now, but I do like her support there. I don't need, meditation for her not to be there. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, no, I mean, basically I was searching for those who maybe don't have it. If there was something that you could share, because we're at a time where, many people, as you know, I'm sure you've met many people, and I'm one of the first to know that I was, given just beyond the normal amount of love and support from my parents and my family, and still to this day with my career, or I can always talk to my father about something. And when I've seen people out there who just don't have that simple thing to be able to ask advice of their father, really find themselves on a different, a different trail or a different boat. So is there something that you could share for just personally from you, for that person out there when they're, when they're down and they're looking for that courage that they don't have or they're trying to build?
I understand the question a little bit more. For me personally, when I didn't have that support from my father or from my mother, I mean, I always kind of had her support, but if I were in a position where I didn't have anyone's support, I think I would try to get support definitely from other people that were around me. Like in my school, I try to seek support from schoolmates or from teachers or just from anyone, honestly. Anyone who would give me the time of day, I would try to reach support from, and I would just try to grow and expand and learn how to have a strong support group other than my family. So I think for me personally, I would just say to connect to other people, even if they're not the people that are most important to you in your life, because they can essentially become people that are really important in your life. You just have to reach out on your own. And I think a way to reach out on your own is to just think that, you know, well, you have nothing else to lose. I mean, if your parents don't like you, then, I mean, what else? Like, you can do other things. Like, you could just go and ask someone else, and you could say, hey, I'm having a problem. Like, do you want to be my friend? Like, just reach out to people. Just feel like you have nothing to lose. Fake it till you make it. That's just what I have to say.
Go ahead.
Paul, may I add something also that I maybe?
Oh, of course, yes.
So the other thing that I know Ophelia and other kids that are not as fortunate as Zoe look into when they are not being respected at home for being their authentic selves is the internet. There's a lot of resources nowadays where kids find out that there are other kids going through the same things they're going through, and they find kind of a community. Of course, in LA, we have a few more resources in terms of that, but I know kids in other states, in other cities, in other rural communities, they don't have that, but they all have access to the internet. And I know that's one way to find community, find support, find information, so you don't feel that you're the only one that's going through that. And I think the advent of the internet and all of that has hopefully prevented some of the unfortunate things that happen to youth when they're not accepted and they're rejected at home. And so I just wanted to add that. And there's a lot of resources online within the film. Also, I was very conscious that we had resources for kids, Trevor Project, Trans Teen Line, even your local chapter of the, like you mentioned, the ACLU, anybody out there that will listen to you and will come to your aid before it reaches a point of being tragic or having a tragic end.
Well, yes, we are at a pivotal time, and really have been for decades. We were one of our producers. He was scheduling conflict. He was unable to see the film in time to join us today, but he is 71 and was around San Francisco when the LGBT movement was, you know, having protests and riots and people were being beat up just for being, police were arresting people just for being gay, and he had seen Harvey Milk speak, and he knew the great Cleve Jones, who created the AIDS quilt, and he really wanted to be here today to speak with someone from the youthful generation and know where it's going out and bring some thought to what has really went on. That this has been, so many people write this off as, oh, well, now it's finally making the news, and or, gosh, going on 20 years now with the audacious, pardon me, it's hard to even say, the Matthew Shepard situation. Those kind of things that we think are just in our last couple decades, but to know that this, a lot of the stuff was going on before we were here, and that it is, that it was, just not, the media wasn't there, but it in some ways it was alongside, civil rights, and that it is, it is the same thing. You know, getting arrested because you are gay is the same as getting arrested because you are a colored man. And so it's these kind of films that you guys make are so important. We obviously faced issues with veterans and the lack of care for veterans, and we really got to find a place to just get into humanity and get back to that. I don't know how we ever got off of it, but Dante, as I look at your film resume, there is a film here in El Fuego, in the fire, and there's a Santana song I love called El Fuego, and I never looked up the translation. I just loved it, and it, and now that you, I hear what it means, it sounds like a fire. Go ahead. So Dante, if you could just briefly tell us about, it says here you went back to Peru, and it you found a personal calling for the document the lives of LGBT, and it resulted in a film called En El Fuego, which won the LA Outfest Audience Award. So could you tell us a little bit about that? So we know here that you're a, like, as you said, you're a director that's in, you're invested in this with years and time. This isn't a just, hey, let's make a cool short film.
Well, like I didn't mention before, but I was actually, I was born in Peru. So I'm Peruvian, and I came to the States when I was 13. So I have been an immigrant for 40 years. And I, at the time I made En El Fuego, which was almost 9 years ago. Well, actually it was 10 years ago when I shot the film in Lima. I had just moved back to the States from living in Europe for 10 years. Where I was married to a man, we had complete equality. It was never an issue. And when I went to Peru and I saw a group of activists with were mostly trans women who were fighting just for their basic humanity, their basic dignity, I was just, you know, I had to do something. I had to document their plight. I had to make document their fight, their resiliency. And I did it with a small little camera. I didn't know what's going to happen with it. I brought it back to LA. I think I went to one of the outfits. You know, they have me, screenings all the time. A programmer heard me talk about my experience in Peru, and she said, I hope you're going to turn that into a film. At the time, I had no funding or anything, and I yes, of course. I asked my mom, she cashed in her life savings and said, okay, go do your thing. And that's what brought me to starting, you know, being a documentarian, and also brought me in touch to the trans community, because this is, we're talking about 2007. This is like a long way before Laverne Cox and Transparent and all of that. So they came to me out of curiosity, like, what is this film about? And I think they were really taken in by the respect and the candor of how I handle the subjects. And it was not about physical transformation. It was about mind, soul, and fighting, because they have to fight to survive, just to be themselves in places like Peru. And so that's how they started inviting me to the community, and I became part of knowing what the trans experience was all about. And I found my intentional family when my mom was sick. They came, helped me. They talked to me on the phone. They were like helping with the caregiving. So they're my family now. I don't have any difference between biological and intentional family. families who's there for you when you need them the most, and families who you can help when they need it the most. So I've always been very, my commitment in my activism, which is what my films are about, is to make sure that this the trans community, especially the trans Latina community, is heard, is visible, is respected, and because they're my family, so I don't want anything to happen to them. And as we, as you and everybody in the audience have heard about trans women of color being murdered systematically every year, we had already 14 murders this year alone. Last year we had 22. We also have youth who committed suicide for being trans or gender nonconforming. So when I'm was thinking of, every time I think about doing a screening or making another film, I'm very conscious of the burden that the community has to bear on being visible. So I'm always really walking that tightrope.
I have to cut off, sorry. I really have to go. There's something really bad going on in my family right now. I have to call my mom. Is that okay if I leave? I'm so sorry.
Of course, handle business. We still have we still have a few minutes that Dante and I can talk. Dante, if you'd like to continue the conversation, we still have some time to roll here. So thank you so much for your time, and best wishes from our show.
I'll call you in a little bit.
All right, thank you.
Yes.
Bye.
And take
sorry
care, Zoe.
That.
Sweetie.
No
bye.
Problem. Handle business.
Dante, you know,
that's
one of the things that also with documentaries, they're not subject to me. I mean, Zoe and Ophelia, they're my family, and their life goes on. You know, my film life is basically focused on making these films, talking to people like you about them, marketing, distributing, all of that, getting the word out. But they're living their lives, you know, as I'm doing all of this and trying to celebrate their being humans, their lives go on, you know, beyond anything that I can control. And that's a huge responsibility for a filmmaker, which I embrace gladly, but with also knowing that I have the responsibility to be respectful of their privacy, respectful of their limitations, and conscious of their lives, you know, go beyond the film world, basically.
Oh yes, of course. I mean, that's the for sure with documentary that even with fictional films, I mean, you do get lucky to have those crews who go with you for the ride and are there no matter what, even after the project ends. But I read here, when I mentioned Harvey Milk, of course, being the first openly gay man to serve on the San Francisco City Council, and of course, with good old American themes, he had to be assassinated for wanting peace and being gay. Can you tell us about Nelly Queen, the life and times of Jose Julio Soria, since it says here that it has some similarities to Mr. Milk?
Well, I mean, Jose was, which is a project that's in progress, and I'm always happy that people bring him up because Jose was the first openly gay man to run for office. He was not elected, but this happened in 1961, I mean, almost 11, 13 years before Harvey got elected to the Board of Supervisors. And also this happened in the city of San Francisco. And the connection is actually very, very direct. I know for a fact from the old interviews, vintage interviews of Jose, that when Harvey came into town, that he went and looked up Jose because Jose introduced him to a lot of the people in San Francisco, and he gave him like the kind of a seal of approval. The reason Jose might not be as well known He lived to the ripe age of 90 years old. He passed away 3 years ago almost. I was actually at the funeral, and I filmed the funeral for that upcoming documentary that you just mentioned, Nelly Queen. And I also call her Nelly Queen because I want to reclaim the name. I know it has a kind of a pejorative connotation to it, but Jose was fiercely proud of being a female impersonator and fiercely proud of the fact that he was gender nonconforming when we didn't have those words coined in our zeitgeist, in our consciousness. So when I heard about his story, and I never got to meet him actually, but I did speak to on the phone with him a week before he passed away. He said to me, "I hope that people do not forget me and that you can preserve my legacy. And please make the film really entertaining, because I was an entertainer at heart. I wanted to teach people, but I also wanted to entertain them." So it's a high order. It's a project that's been taking a long time because it's a huge undertaking, and I don't take any project lightly. But Jose's life is it's kind of like bringing the life of Rosa Parks or Bayo Rustin into being, and I think I'm just taking my time with it. But I'm so honored to even be part of the project.
Well, that's this is a moment where I wish my friend would have been on, because he grew up in San Francisco and of course knew that there was, you know, someone always has the spotlight. No disrespect to Mr. Milk, but he knew the people who were like the famous line in the movie Milk where Harvey Milk says, "I'm not the candidate, I'm just part of a movement." And so he knew these people and knew different people who wrote speeches for Harvey Milk and were part of his campaign, and Harvey just had that you know, that pizzazz and that personality for it. And one thing that I can say that I want people to watch this movie. I've heard so many people, they just refuse to ever watch it. They won't watch it. They don't care that Sean Penn won an Oscar. They don't care that it's a good film. But my friend who watched it said he knew many people who walked out because they said it was just like watching a documentary of Harvey Milk. They said it was as if Harvey was alive and that Sean just captured him and embodied him. And it was just like, wow, he's back to entertain us on this Friday 7 p.m. show. So, you know, please, people, try to find it in your hearts, your space, however you can to... We've all watched a film we're uncomfortable with, but we're so far, 2016, we're so far into time to be not watching a film because it's about a colored man, or not watching a film because it's about a, you know, other than I give you permission to not praise Hitler and watch a Hitler film. you know, that's the one where I'll say, okay, cool, have your opinion, don't pay any respect to Hitler. But it's sad. And so I was very thankful when Jonah sent me this film, because I had never gotten to write about other festivals through screeners in other states. There's a number of festivals where I've covered them for 5 or 6 years. Here in Southern California, San Diego, Los Angeles, and now we're going to be moving to covering festivals in other states, not just through reporters, but myself. And so this was very cool, because not that I ever thought I wouldn't be accepted at Outfest, but I love festivals where I have associates or friends, someone that I can relate to, and go and support their film. So it was really exciting for me. This has been one of my favorite festival experiences, working with Jonah, seeing your guys' film, and then, of course, it's always an honor to see a filmmaker's premiere. It means so much more than words can explain. And again, as you heard in the review, and for those of you that didn't hear the review of the film, please go back in the archives. I reviewed the film. Again, it's called Raising Zoe. And right now I'm going to take the quick time here to plug the, and if you have anything, any other sites that you want to plug, we have on Facebook, it's facebook.com/RASINGZOE/ on Facebook. Again, that's the facebook.com/RASINGZOE/. You have the teaser up on Vimeo, vimeo.com/14753740. That's vimeo.com/14753740. As we go into our last few minutes here, is there anything else you would like to plug or say to wrap up Raising
yes.
Zoe?
Yes. Thank you, Paul. We also have the Twitter account, which is Raising Zoe Doc. So it's Raising Zoe, the title of the film, and Doc, D-O-C. And yes, just to finish things up, is I would say that the film, it's about, like all my films, Transvisible and En el Fuego, their main theme, all the characters are very strong Latina women, and because they remind me of my own mother, you know, like you were talking about your own parents. She was always very supportive of me. She was very proud of me. She told me I could do anything I wanted to. And this is really a love poem for all those parents who support their kids no matter what. And it's a family film. At our world premiere, we had a lot of parents. Some of them had LGBTQ children, some didn't. And they just, the emotion that it elicits, because like you were saying before in your review, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, you can have whatever kids that you have to honor them, respect them, and let them be who they want to be. And I know we live in turbulent times. A lot of families have been shattered by violence, LGBTQ families and people of color families. And we need to grieve that loss, but we also need to fight, you know. And sometimes the fight begins at home, and to just be your authentic self. So I'm honoring with this film the parents who are our first allies and who allowed us to be ourselves by loving us unconditionally and instinctively. And that's the last thing I'm going to say. And I'm so grateful to you, and I look forward to talking to you again about any of my projects. And please contact me with any of your contacts that you think might want to do another interview, review, or whatever. I'm open to all of that, and I appreciate all the time you're taking with our film, with Zoe, and with me. And thank you to your listeners as well. Thank you, Paul.
Oh, no, yes, yeah, you know, you're very welcome. And thank you. You know, my mother is half Mexican, so I'm only a quarter, but I have that special connection that my mother is behind anything I do. Of course, except for when I don't listen to her. She's actually one of the co-producers of this show, and it's great to work with her and create with her, and she's where I get my subversive, you know, fight for a good cause, fight for the underdog, don't take any crap. so that's her, and she gets that from my grandma. So it's I can trace it back and see where I get it, and it's great with her. We've gotten to do episodes lately where we've gotten to have, you know, filmmakers who were taking on religious aspects, who were taking on racism, who were taking on so many things that are plaguing America right now, and we were just sitting back and smiling because we were thinking, we get to promote a film, we get to go after an issue without it being a CNN argument hour, and we get to learn from a filmmaker. So it's just a win-win-win, and we appreciate the thanks, but we're here to support other artists because we're artists ourselves. So we just want to extend the help and support that other artists need, that we would want or that we hope to get when we're out there doing a project. So to us, it's just a big circle. And if we can just keep the good circle of peace and aloha and love going on, then maybe one of these days, you know, we can win some of these, you know, in a peaceful way, we can win these mini battles. And so we return the thank you for coming on, and we'll definitely get you the you and Zoe the link tonight. We'll get it off to Jonah so you have it. And these shows are half yours, half ours, so we never expect it, but please feel free to share it if you want. And of course, you had said something before I did. Guests are always welcome back if they want to. We have guests back who just come back and review a film. We have guests who come back and sit on panels and discuss different aspects of the film business. So we want this to be like a big family of film lovers, that there's no competition, there's no stabbing in the back. It's just, let's love film and let's just enjoy that we're all from different places. So, you know, with that, have a wonderful night, and we appreciate your time, and we'll get you that link very soon.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you to all your listeners and to your mom.
Oh, thank you. I will tell her. You have a wonderful evening.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
And that was a wonderful conversation with Zoe Luna and Dante Alencastre. This is why we do it. Like I said, we do it to support filmmakers. We do it to talk about issues. We do it to just love movies. I'm going to jump into a big pile of movies. Actually, I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think I got 12. So that means that's going to be 4 or 5 tonight, 4 or 5 tomorrow, and then a few on Thursday. So we will be back on, shoot, I forget what night it is. I think it's Friday. I have a film talk with a buddy from film school. We're going to sit down and we're going to discuss Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Paths of Glory, the great Stanley Kubrick. And we're going to discuss these because they are very relevant to our political times. So stay tuned. Pardon me for smacking the mic. Anyways, thank you for joining us. Whether it's morning, afternoon, evening, whenever you're catching this, make sure and watch a good movie tonight. Aloha, and most of all, peace to you all, because right now is when we need it most.